So, Jesus is teaching. He's teaching what's called often the Sermon on the Mount. He's teaching his disciples in particular. He's teaching them what it is to be a follower of Jesus. He fulfills the law for us. There's nothing we have to do to be made righteous. We need to keep underlining that as we go through these sections. We're not doing these things to be righteous before God. This is not our standing before God, but it is what we want to do to live right before God as followers of Jesus. He calls us to follow him not just to be saved, but he calls us to follow him to be like him. That's what a disciple is. It's someone who mimics, who follows the pattern of their master. And that's what we want to do for Jesus. So we want to be like Jesus, saved by Jesus, but wanting to be like Jesus, to be righteous. And we thought about different ways that we do that in our character at the beginning, those so-called Beatitudes, about how we influence the world, about how we seek to keep the law in its heart, in its love for God, in its love for others. We thought about our own hearts to do with murder, to do with adultery, how it all begins in the heart, how it's not just a matter of kind of outward ticking the box, we haven't physically done this or that, but it's to do with our hearts. And we thought about how we go further in our love and our sacrifice and our giving. And we thought about our religious activities. Last time we thought about prayer and fasting. And now I guess we get down to more nuts and bolts things. But what is very striking, just notice it as we're going through, that this Sermon on the Mount, a couple of thousand years ago, but it seems so relevant. If you think about all the things we've done so far, and again this morning, it's talking about possessions, about money. Next week is talking about anxiety. I think you'd call them pretty significant issues in our day. Money, anxiety, sometimes anxiety about money and about situations. And Jesus begins by talking firstly about treasure. He talks about treasure. Not working. I don't have one because I didn't send it. I don't have one because I didn't send it, because I didn't do it, I don't think, but I can't remember. I really can't remember. It was a few days ago. No, I don't think I did it. Sorry about that. Okay, first point is treasure. Invest your heart, verses 19 through to 21. If you're at home and you've got a handout, you're specially privileged. Treasure, invest your heart, verses 19 through to 21. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, and so on. The word treasure, it's for precious, for valuable items. That's what we mean by treasure. Often something that's hidden has to be kind of sought, has to be found, has to be laid up, has to be stored up, you know, put in a box, put under the bed, put in an investment somewhere. That's the idea of treasure. And Jesus talks very simply, very straightforward, about two kinds of treasure. What are the two kinds of treasure? Treasure on earth, treasure in heaven. He talks about treasure on earth, and he describes it for us. It's where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Good treasure. What Jesus is making the point is that however sparkly the treasure is, ultimately its value, its use, is only temporary because it decays and it's very insecure. It can be stolen. It's not ultimately something you can trust. It's not ultimately actually treasure. It may have value, it may have use, it may be sparkly, but ultimately it's not much use. Treasure on earth. Secondly, treasure in heaven. The opposite of earthly treasure. Incorruptible, unstealable, it's secure, it's lasting. I wonder if Peter was thinking about that when he writes his letter that we looked at about this time last year. 1 Peter 1 verse 4, who talks about our inheritance, and it says, it's an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. And Jesus says, treasure in heaven, treasure to do with, as we'll see in a moment, the kingdom of heaven, that treasure is something to be stored up, is something to be ultimately valued because it's ultimately valuable. And he concludes with this profound statement. Verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Whatever you think is most worthwhile, whatever you value the most, your heart will be drawn there and you will invest there. So he's making the point about the relative value, kingdom of earth, treasure on earth, sorry, treasure in heaven. He's making the point about the relative value, but then he's questioning our hearts. He's not just saying it's a mind thing. You know, you need to just know this and then you'll do the right thing. It's a heart thing. It's about where our affections are. And he's making the point that what we value the most, our heart will be drawn to it and we will orientate our lives around it in order to lay it up as the profoundly most important thing that we do. What we value, what we prize, the treasure as we see it, our hearts will follow. I mean, it happens in a small way. I once had a thing called share options with a company. And what it means is they give you the option to buy the shares at the level they were when you joined the company. And then I was leaving 4 years later and you're allowed to buy the shares at the price that they were when you joined the company. And the price that they were when you left the company, if it's lower and you don't want the shares, you just don't bother. If it's much higher, then you'd say you buy the shares instantly and you sell them at a profit. And I remember a period of a few weeks where I'd left the company and I had a little window of 4 weeks or something in which I had to either buy the shares or discard them. And I remember looking every day at the price on the NASDAQ of this particular company that I was at. That was where my treasure is for that moment. I'm actually doing a bad illustration of this point here. I do know that. But I'm just making the point that if there's something that you think is valuable, you will follow it. You will look after it. And I remember kind of looking every day and, you know, refreshing the page. How many dollars per share is it at the moment? How many dollars now? I remember a particular Friday evening where I was watching and had the fun of saying, sell, sell! I was visiting my Uncle Don, I think, who was around at my parents' house at the time. And on the telephone, I sold these shares. It was great fun. Where your ultimate treasure is, that will be where your interest is. Not just a few shares that just come and go. I know exactly this treasure on earth we're just talking about. But if you kind of multiply that up with the whole of life, if you just treasure shares in a company, money in the bank, possessions that you own, if you just treasure those things, you will put your whole life around that. It won't be just refreshing the screen a few times for one particular activity. It will be your interest, your goal, the thing that occupies your thoughts, your dreams. That's what Jesus is saying. Your heart will follow after it. Now, it's worth saying that Jesus is not telling us that laying up any treasure on earth is wrong. He's not saying that wealth in itself is wrong. He's not saying it's wrong to have a pension pot of some sort or owning a stamp collection that you think one day might be valuable and help your offspring in some way, or some diamonds that you keep that you want to pass on to future generations. He's not saying that. Think about the book of Proverbs, and it praises the ant for storing up in, I don't know, it's summer or winter, but anyway, storing up in order to have food in the winter or whatever it is. And often, saving some money is a love thing for our family or for our descendants, if you like, so there's something in store for them or for us to be cared for when we're older. That's not a bad thing. That's a loving thing. That's a caring thing. But the crucial question is not, have you got some wealth? Have you got some money? Have you got a pension? That's not the point. The point is your heart attached to those things? And is it in those things that you trust? Do you feel secure because you got a pension, because you got a decent car, because you got a decent house, because you got a reasonable job, because you have investments? Is that why you feel secure? If it is, your heart will become more and more attached to those things, and they will be a god to you, and ultimately they will be useless. Absolutely useless, ultimately, to you. So that's one thing worth saying. It's not about laying up the treasure itself. It's not about storing things. It's about attaching our heart to them. And the other thing is to just think about heaven for a moment, as it's used here. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now, I think ultimately Jesus is talking about the eternal state, the new heavens and the new earth. That's kind of what we value most. But if you think about how Matthew uses heaven, he often attaches it to the kingdom of heaven. It's his favorite phrase, the kingdom of heaven. There's lots of parables coming up about the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is like this. And you remember that in the Lord's Prayer, we prayed, "Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." So when we talk about laying up treasures in heaven, it's not that we're in some kind of meditative state that we're just thinking about heaven all the time. It's much bigger than that. We're thinking ultimately we're going to the new heavens and new earth, but we're more thinking, how do I have kingdom of heaven values right now? How do I ensure that God's will is done here on earth as it is in heaven? How do I value everything in the light of heaven? How do I help to build the kingdom right now, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of heaven here on earth? How do I quietly, imperceptibly at times, sometimes rather fruitlessly, sometimes with sacrifice, build the kingdom of heaven? That's laying up treasures in heaven. And it includes, of course, thinking about heaven. Of course, it includes thinking about that. And of course, it includes weighing everything in the light of that. But it also includes doing stuff right here. And we can be owning things whilst still laying up treasure in the kingdom of heaven. You can't just say, well, let's just get rid of everything we own and then we'll just think about heaven. No, but it's about where your heart is. If your heart is attached to heaven and to the King of heaven, then it will influence how you hold everything else. So the question is, where is your heart this morning? That's where Jesus leaves it so skillfully. He doesn't quite make the conclusion. He just puts it out there. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. So friends, where's your heart? What's your heart invested in? It's not wrong to seek treasure. Everyone seeks treasure. Everyone looks for value. But where are you looking for it? Where is your heart? Where's your affections? Where is your mind? Where is your desire? Where is your longing? Looking at Psalm 27 recently, and in that psalm, David fears what's going on around him. He feels his own security, and his response to that fear, enemies advancing and so forth, is that he wants to be in the presence of God. He wants to be in relationship with God. He wants to be gazing upon his beauty. It's that famous expression, "One thing I will ask of the Lord, to dwell in his temple, to look upon his face." That's what he wants. He wants the presence of God. And that's what gives shape to everything else, all his fears. And as well as working for fears, it works for value and treasure too. In all our worries and anxieties, but also in all our trusts and security, we say, well, I'm not sure about my money. I'm not sure about my possessions. I will hold them lightly because the one thing I desire is the presence of God, is fellowship with God. I desire the King of the kingdom of heaven. I want to be in fellowship with him now. I want to be in fellowship with him forever. Is that you? There's nothing that would take your heart away from that. Where is your heart this morning? And of course, that shapes our investment. If our heart is saying that, if our heart is crying, the one thing I want is to be in fellowship with God, then that shapes our investment, doesn't it? And again, it doesn't mean we give all of our money away necessarily, but it does mean we hold on to things loosely. That's a hard expression to work out what it is, especially in a wealthy country like ours, to kind of what that exactly means. Because we all own stuff. All of you own some things in your house. And some of you own more than one pair of shoes. You do. I know. And where does it stop? And I'm sure none of you are putting your faith in your shoes. But accumulatively, well, you might put your faith in them to sort of, you know, stop your feet getting blisters or something. But beyond that, I'm sure you're not investing your whole life in a pair of shoes. But there is a point at which the accumulation of shoes and cupboards to put them in and houses to put the cupboards in and cars to collect them in and everything that goes around that. Eventually, it does become what makes you feel secure. It does become what your heart longs for. And we need to pray that God would show us where the lines fall. Because it's not like I can sit here and say, what you need is this number of this item, this number of this item, these many holidays per year, this amount of pension, and anything else is excessive and putting your treasure in the wrong place. That's not what Jesus is asking us to do. He's just asking us where our heart is. And we need to keep praying, Lord, help my heart. Your heart must sometimes feel secure because of those things, because mine does. Sometimes I feel better. Sometimes I look out, I've got a reasonable car at the moment. I look out at my car and I think life's a little bit better because I've got that car. And you know, I've got four walls around me. I was thinking the other day when it was raining so heavily, I'm so thankful I've got a house that doesn't leak. Because it's just so much hassle. And sometimes you go from that, which is, you know, thankful to God that you've got a house that doesn't leak, through to thinking this somehow makes me safe. And it doesn't, does it? Where's your heart this morning, and where are you investing? Where are you making sacrifices? What are you willing to give up in order to show you've got kingdom values, in order to build the kingdom? Next point, and really they build, so they're a little bit shorter, these next two. Attention, where do you direct your gaze? The first one was treasure, invest your heart. Second point, attention, direct your gaze. This kind of straightforward, but trying to work out what it means, sort of illustration about the eyes and light and darkness. It's a word picture. And the eyes do let light into our whole body. It's such a brilliant illustration because you think about it. You know, I'm standing here and this is so much light. And it's kind of all over the body. I know I get a bit metaphysical about these things, but it's kind of weird, isn't it, how the eyes work, that they do let light. You know, these little holes are your pupils and it all goes in. And I feel like there's stuff all around here. And it's all over. You know, sight is an amazing thing. It's one of the evidences for creation, just incidentally. You know, how fantastic this organ, the eye, couldn't possibly have evolved. It's so well designed. And Jesus says, the eye lets light into the body if it's a good eye. And that word he uses there for good could be healthy, like functioning, it's working properly. Or it could be the word simple, which can mean sort of good as in working, but probably means focused, directed. And that's contrasted with a bad eye. If your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. And the unhealthy could be mean, but it's also a word that can just mean evil, corrupted. And what I think Jesus is saying, if you connect it with what comes before and afterwards, it's got to be in this context of where we invest, where our hearts are. And I think he's saying this: we should have a simple, single focus on the kingdom of heaven, and we let the light of that kingdom come into our lives and inform all that we do. So we let the light, which ultimately is Christ, ultimately we look at Christ, we listen to Christ, we look at the whole of the Bible through the prism of Christ, we understand everything through Christ and through his work, and that's light shining in and making our whole body healthy and helping us to work out where to invest. And having let the light shine in, it's also about that kind of single focus, that we're looking for one thing, that our attention is directed towards one thing. We really do want to be there. You know what it's like when you're trying to catch something, a bus or a plane or a train, and you want to be there, and you see up ahead, it's the airport or something else. You're not interested in anything else. I remember once when I was going to Milan Airport, Linate Airport, and I was almost always late because the meetings went on, and you're trying to catch sort of one of the later planes out on a Friday night in Italy. And you're driving through these beautiful places in the city of Milan, the Duomo, where, you know, the church with the big kind of round top on it, and you think this is fantastic. You know, if only I had some time to stop. But you don't care. You don't care about any of it. You know, the beautiful stuff in the middle of the city, the beautiful countryside, getting on your way to Linate, you couldn't care less about it. All you're interested in is the airport. That's your single focus. I had a fun story once. There was an old taxi driver who took me there, was taking me there, and he managed to go the wrong way up a slip road of a motorway. If you've ever done that, it's quite scary if you go the wrong way up a slip road to a motorway, especially in a foreign country where you're disorientated anyway because you're driving on the right. And he didn't speak any English, so it was quite fun. But he'd lost his single focus on getting me to the airport. I think he was trying to kill me. But you know that feeling, single focus. I don't care about the sightseeing on the way. I just want to get to the destination. That's where I want to be. And I think Jesus is saying that. Let the light come in. Let me teach you. And then have a single focus. I want the kingdom of heaven because it's the most valuable thing. That's my simple, single-minded focus for the glory of God. And then Jesus goes on to talk about worship. Worship, choose whom you love to serve. Your heart is investing in the kingdom of heaven. Your eyes are focused on the kingdom of heaven. Let the light come in. Focus on building that kingdom. And then finally, what do you worship? Jesus makes, again, a really simple, straightforward point, easy to understand. No one can serve two masters. And you might think, well, is that true? You know, you can have more than one job, can't you? But in that context, as a slave, you could only be the slave of one master. Because to be a slave of someone, it was an all-encompassing thing. It was a total life commitment. And so in that context, it was absolutely accurate. You can only serve one master. You can only be a slave to one master. And so Jesus makes that analogy, and then he says, either you will hate the one and love the other, devoted to one and love the other, and despise the other. And then here comes the punchline as he wraps up this section about values, and he says, you cannot serve both God and money. Just like a slave can't serve two masters, you cannot serve both God, treasure in heaven, single focus on the kingdom of heaven. You cannot do that and serve your money. And there's just a couple of things to say about that as we think about it. One is just a very simple observation that Jesus talks about both God and money as being masters, doesn't he? I think sometimes when we think about possessions, we don't think about them as having mastered us, but Jesus has got it absolutely right, hasn't he? You cannot serve both God and money. In the end, you're either serving one or the other. You're either living for treasures on earth, material possessions and security, or you're living for God. But if you're living for treasures on earth, you're not in control. That's the point. You think you are, but you're not. Jesus says, you're not in control. Actually, they will master you. If you read any Tim Keller books, he's really good at making this point about how our idols, whatever they are, but particularly thinking about kind of material possessions, in the end, they suck the life out of you. They are terrible gods. You don't own them. They own you. If you seek to get more and more material possessions, if that's where you attach your heart, you will be ultimately disappointed because they're no good. But also, they will drag the life out of you trying to get some good from them. You will serve them. They will not serve you. And what Jesus is saying is, here's something much more liberating. Serve God. Serve God. Why is it much more liberating? Because he's a good master. And because ultimately, it's real treasure. Ultimately, it's real treasure. And so as Jesus finishes his little section, the question for us, as we thought about our hearts, as we thought about our eyes, he's asking about our worship and also asking us really to make a decision, as it were, to say, let me stop trying to live for all this world has to offer, trying to accumulate, trying to sort of attach a bit of my heart to this and a bit of my heart to God. Let me stop trying to do that and let me attach my heart to God. Let me attach my heart to the kingdom of heaven. Let me look, gaze at Jesus. May him, knowing him, be all that I desire. And then everything else will figure itself out. As we'll see next week, as we look to do with anxiety. It's hard, and it's pretty straightforward to understand what I've said this morning. I don't think there's anything that's going to be confusing in all that. But it leaves us with a question, and as we keep saying, I said at the beginning, I said at the end, as we work through this Sermon on the Mount, you will feel convicted, but not sent to say, oh, I must try harder, I just must try harder. It's to say, Jesus is just calling us to realize we have a loving Father in heaven. We have a loving Savior, Jesus, who's fulfilled the law for us. And he's just calling us to follow him. And he's prompting our hearts to say, where is your heart, Christian, this morning? Attach your heart to me. Attach your heart to the kingdom of heaven. Ask for enlightenment. Ask for help to do that. We all need help, don't we? To just hold on to things lightly. But how liberating it would be, how different you would be from everyone around you. You'd still probably own the same number of things. You might not, you might decide to get rid of some. But it's not about ticking the box of getting rid of a few things. But it's about where your heart is, where your dreams are, where your goals are directed, where your gaze is directed, what you worship, what you serve. And Jesus calls us to serve him.